From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for February 4th, 2022. Your Milwaukee Bucks are on a Western road trip. They won't be back in town until Valentine's Day. And it's National Work Naked Day. Thanks to Zoom, too many people are celebrating. A woman in California was hell-bent on getting her money's worth at an all-you-can-eat sushi bar. She suffered serious stomach cramps after binge eating 32 sushi rolls, a bowl of Asian green beans, two jalapeno poppers, and a bowl of miso soup. Just reading this gave me cramps. Late last year at an auction, a cask of Irish malt whiskey sold for $2.3 million. This cask is the equivalent of 608 bottles. So if you're doing the math, and I know you are, it's $5,700 a bottle. And 608 bottles seems like the perfect size for an Irish wake. Transportation officials in Minnesota said a stretch of interstate was closed last week when a truck lost its load of potatoes and the potatoes froze in place on the highway like a million little speed bumps. And the boys and girls, well, that's where mashed potatoes come from. And staying in Minnesota, we recently did a story about Minnesota's annual Name the Snowplow contest. Well, the contest is long over, but in honor of the late actress Betty White, they christened one of their snowplows Betty Whiteout. How cool is that? In Canada, a woman drove her car onto a partially frozen river and, of course, crashed right through the ice. While onlookers were planning her rescue, they were confused to see that she climbed out onto the roof of her sinking car to take some selfies. And those selfies were the reason the insurance company denied her claim. On the podcast today, fully clothed, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Chris Evers, Joel Dreising, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty decent week for the market. On Monday, great rally up 406 points for the Dow, last day of January. Tuesday, a late session rally took the Dow 273 points higher. On Wednesday, we added another 224 points. Thursday, not so good. News on Meta really took the market down. 518 point loss for the Dow. On Friday, the Dow shed 22 points to end the week. The week overall, the NASDAQ was up 2.4%, adding 327 points to close at 14,098. The broader markets, S&P 500 up 1.6%, adding 69 points to close today at 4501. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 364 points, a 1% advance. Closes the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 35,089. 10-year Treasury yield jumped up 1.93% yield. Year-to-date, NASDAQ still down almost 10%. S&P 500 down 5.5. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 3.4% year-to-date. You know, you take a look at the market, it's pretty ugly January. S&P was down 5.3% in January. The Dow down a little over 3. NASDAQ down over 9. Worst month for the stock market in the United States since way back in March of 2020. You know, Kyle, we continue to deal with the aftershocks of higher interest rates. As you know, as recently as last November, the Fed wasn't planning on raising rates. That all quickly changed in early January. Now, about everybody thinks the Fed's going to raise at least four or five times, maybe even more. Could even see 50 basis point increase, 0.5% increase in mid-March when they anticipate the first increase. So, of course, growth stocks get hit more, having the higher cash flow. I read recently that the last 50 trading days, value has dramatically outperformed growth. And it's the first time it's happened in several decades. So you get an idea of people lightening up, particularly on the tech stocks and going into value. But I look at the market overall, Kyle, and this strikes me as just your garden variety correction that comes along once a year or so. I'm attracted to the underlying strength of the economy. GDP is still supposed to be up 4.5%, according to the World Bank. In the United States for the year, that's more than double what we experienced the last 12 years. Earnings estimates for the year are coming down a tad, according to FactSet. They're now estimating their earnings to be up 8.6% for the year. Still a good number, considering that 7% is average. But Kyle, really nice to see the market turn around, except for Thursday, of course, and finish the week positive.
Yeah, happy to see some positive numbers for once at a weekend here, Bob. I think, investors, clients need to remember a couple of things going on out there right now. One, we're in the middle of earnings season. And so certainly we saw some pretty significant shifts because of some forward projections with Meta, the old Facebook. You know, the biggest one-day loss in market value ever. The company lost more than $237 billion in market cap in the span of, one trading day. That's almost unheard of. But the thing that you pointed out in your open that I think has been most important to me is just that transition we've seen in the last 50 days between value and growth. And importantly, it isn't strictly because growth stocks have sold off. Value stocks have also sold off, although not significantly. But there are a few areas in value that have held up significantly better, and those have tended to be the more economically sensitive areas. Energy stocks, financials have done decidedly better than many other areas of the market. And I think as you look at what that really speaks to, you add that up along with the move we've seen in the 10-year treasury, I think it points to an economy that's continuing to be resilient, that's continuing to be strong. Certainly, we have progressed in this into kind of a new phase of the economic recovery post-pandemic or post at least the early days of the pandemic. But I think if anything, the market is speaking to the fact that this isn't strictly a sell-off because of economic projections or because we think that something bad is happening. It's a little bit of a shock to the system right now with how quickly rates have moved. But it's just going to take a little time to digest. And so I appreciate your comments on this being kind of the garden variety correction. I think when you look at the 10-year, when you look at what some sectors are doing, holding up a little better, I think that's a bit more confirmation of what you're saying.
Kyle, it's a good time to remind listeners that when interest rates go up, it adversely affects growth stocks. A real easy explanation. If you're trying to figure out the value of a company, you want to look as far into the future as you possibly can to try to get a sense of what future cash flow is going to look like. Then you have to discount that to a present value, typically using the yield on the 10-year treasury. So the point is, companies that gush cash, growth stocks, get discounted to a lower present value when interest rates go up. I mean, said another way, when the Fed took interest rates almost to zero in the spring of 2020, it really helped the growth stocks because of how they move relative to interest rates. So what we're seeing here is, repricing of the growth area of the market, and of course, some of it spilled into the broader markets, but a repricing of growth stocks relative to higher interest rates. And the point is, rates are only going to go up so high. You look at inflation and, the experts think, give or take, 40% of the inflation that we're experiencing now is from government stimulus programs, give or take. That's mostly in the rearview mirror at this point. Remaining 60% is because of bottlenecks in the supply chain. The pros think that's going to be unwound mostly by the end of the year. Not every sector across the board, but mostly unwound. People that I respect are anticipating that inflation by year end could go down to 2.5 to 3%. Of course, we're not going to know that for a while. So there's a limit to how high rates can go. But as we pointed out earlier, the underlying strength of the economy, 4.5% GDP is huge, let alone nice earnings growth. Art, let's bring you into the show. Bonds have taken a pretty good hit here. year to date. And what I find interesting is that some of the intermediate funds have held up better than the short-term bond funds. And the tendency for a lot of folks is to run to short-term or even to cash in a rising rate environment. But in a number of cycles, you and I have figured out that the intermediate durations are the way to go. But this year, really no safe harbor.
Yeah, but it's fascinating to look at portfolios year to date, especially, you know, as we can in the portal, look at the performance for the month of January alone. It's tough to find anything that made any money, even though the intermediate terms might have done better than we might have expected. In an environment like this, in which investors at times expect the worst, it's disappointing that we're losing money in bond funds that we buy for safety. So I think investors have to be careful not to overreact to the performance of their bond funds. And it's also important to note that the Fed hasn't done anything yet other than tell us what they're going to do and sort of the way they're going to do it without specifics with respect to the timing of their moves. So the fact that investors have sold bonds, and as you're well aware, municipal bonds have sold off dramatically this year. Those managers typically go out further on the yield curve. So it makes sense that they've incurred, you know, higher losses year to date. But again, the last thing one should be doing is selling them if they're holding them legitimately for longer term reasons. So this is quite frankly what happens when, you know, the markets have to adjust to a new reality, which is stimulus is gone. The economy is as you guys have, you know, Kyle and Bob, both of you have mentioned, the economic indicators, and Joel, I'm sure we'll embellish that further. This is a tremendous economy that's probably only going to be getting stronger. And so the Fed in telling us they're going to bring things back to normal, they're not trying to destroy the markets. They're trying to stabilize expectations going forward. So I expect everything to do well over time. Over short periods of time, I think all bonds are going to, you know, be in rough waters for a while. Today, what, the yield went up to 1.92 or 93, which is the highest level it's been at probably in a couple of years, the yield on the 10-year. So batten down the hatches just in case, but maintain those fixed income positions for stability.
Chris, I was interested to read yesterday that market valuations currently are back to where we were just before COVID clobbered the economy, valuations are similar to what we experienced in February of 2020. So after all of that time and all of that angst and the collapse that we saw in the spring of 2020, pretty interesting to see that kind of recovery, certainly for valuations.
Yeah, it's one of those reminders that if you could just close your eyes and go away for a couple of years, you'd be completely, you know, unaware of the ride that you took. But over a long period of time, it tends to be earnings growth, which drives your return as a stockholder. You know, coming back to interest rates and its effect on valuations, you know, we're talking today how the 10-year is back to 1.93. Well, that happens to be where the 10-year was prior to COVID as well. So as we talk about valuations making essentially, you know, a circular path from maybe going a little bit more extended when rates were extremely low down to 0.6 in the 10-year. And now valuations being just about exactly where they were before the pandemic and interest rates are right about where they were before the pandemic. You know, I sit back and say, well, that all makes sense, which is, I think, always good as an investor to feel like things are, you know, one and one equals two.
Joel, the government announced this morning that 467,000 new jobs were created in January. About 40% of those came from leisure and hospitality alone. Pretty strong hiring. What's your take on the labor report?
If you remember a month ago when that report came out, everybody was complaining that the numbers were so weak. There's 199,000 jobs. Well, today, when they announced the numbers, they said actually it was 510,000 jobs that were created in December. So those fluctuate a lot, and it's kind of dangerous to put too much hope or angst into one month. But today's report was really strong. It showed a couple of things. It showed that Omicron has taken a toll, that it kept people out of the workforce. It kept people home, away from work. I can embellish on that, as Art said. I could give you some more details on that stuff. But on the other hand, it also showed that the economy is resilient, that even though Omicron was setting back employers and workers, that they added those 467,000 jobs. The unemployment rate went up to 4%. It was 3.9% the month before, but that it went up for a good reason. The good reason is that there are more people encouraged to get out there and look for jobs.
On Tuesday, the Institute for Supply Management said that U.S. manufacturing activity slowed in January. We saw a similar slowdown in the service sector indications as well.
Yeah, and both of those, although you don't like to see slowing, they're both coming off of really high, strong numbers. Both of them have been actually expanding ever since that short recession in 2020. And the manufacturing index actually showed for the third month in a row that purchase managers are seeing some improvement in both the labor supply and the delivery conditions. So some of the things that are challenging them as they're facing increased demand are actually easing a little bit, although both for the service index and for the manufacturing index, they're saying, you know, we still are struggling with getting workers and with getting supplies through.
Chris, the other day I talked to an individual that was complaining about how strict daycare is right now. And the person said that the daycare center, they have a one cough and you're out rule. Just brutal. You know, one cough, you're gone. And they call your parents to come get you. And the reason why I bring this up is I'm so struck by how we had a pretty significant decline in workforce participation rates since the pandemic started. I track COVID cases every morning in Milwaukee County, chomping at the bit to reopen the firm downtown to get all of us back together again. And I see that the almost a third of people that took a COVID test around New Year's tested positive. And now Milwaukee County, it's down to 6%. Pretty big drop in a little over a month. And Chris, here's where I'm going with this. You know, it seems to me that we could potentially envision a time when the pandemic is going to transition to an endemic, and you'll get more and more folks being willing to go back to work. They say a lot of people won't work retail because they don't want to get COVID. A lot of people won't work hospitality because they don't want to get COVID. People just flat out don't want to be around a lot of other people because, unfortunately, COVID got politicized. But it seems to me that, at least for Omicron, that the light is coming to the end of the tunnel. And I think that's going to impact markets. I think you'll see an increase in people willing to work. I think you listen to earnings calls. You heard a lot of CFOs this last month say, that their business was hurt because so many people called in sick. So I think we're going to be surprised to see this transition where we're going to get more people willing to re-enter the workforce once we get closer to heading towards an endemic status for COVID.
I find myself watching the labor force participation rate almost more than the headline unemployment rate when I see the labor market report. Seeing new people enter the labor force because either now they're able to get the childcare they need or they feel more comfortable returning to the labor force is one of the most important things for this year for us to pay attention to as investors. If we talk about wage inflation and what that means for the economy and us as investors, there's two concerns. Not only one, does wage inflation draw and drive normal inflation that the Fed has to react to with some level of interest rate increases, but higher wage inflation is essentially decreasing margins and hurting profitability of businesses at the same time. So it's a double whammy for essentially investors. So seeing more people enter the labor force and a supply of more labor is exactly what we need to see, what we want to see. So for everybody sitting at home and wanting to pick through a labor market report, I'd say that would be the key point, to your point, Bob, that you should be checking on to see what direction we're heading in the next few months.
Well, Chris, I'm sorry, I just wanted to jump in on that. So you know, with the numbers today, we saw that that labor force participation rate actually was the highest it's been since March of 2020, which is still, you know, it's gone down a lot over the years. It's basically where it was, you know, back in 1977. But that was a good sign. And the fact is, it's showing that there are more people who were sitting on the sidelines, who were, as Bob said, you know, not wanting to get back into the workforce because of concerns of COVID, or because they weren't able to get the daycare that they needed for their kids, or they retired, or they just didn't find it worth it to go back to work. But we're seeing more of those people come off the sidelines, and that's hopeful.
What I appreciate about this conversation is that one of the reasons participation has climbed is because wages have climbed, right? You attract more people to the workforce because they're a little more willing to work for $20 an hour than they were for $18. And so short term, Chris, as you point out, I think that leads to some inflationary pressure. Longer term, that's actually the thing that might solve some of that inflationary pressure. It creates the ability for more goods and services to be out there. And so it creates a supply constraint temporarily. We saw some, I think, less natural supply constraints as a result of COVID, where certain goods and services were essentially erased from the marketplace for a period of time. And I think this higher wage trend, and in particular, higher wages in leisure and hospitality, they actually create more services that can be sold. And so that should help to keep prices in check as we get kind of this supply-demand imbalance back into, I think, a more typical cycle or a more typical place. You know, as we especially transition into spring and summer, I think I mentioned earlier this week in a conversation with that we had as a firm that there are a number of airline executives, it's just one example, that are talking about some pretty meaningful potential travel they see happening later on this year. You know, we talked about last year as kind of the year in which we would emerge from COVID and everybody would kind of get out there. Well, Omicron, Delta, a little before that, put, I think, a little bit of a damper on some of that party. And I think as we, you know, Bob, as you mentioned, move from pandemic to endemic, you know, I think we put those party hats back on, we get back out there. And so as the Fed is, you know, pulling away the punch bowl, I think we're, you know, just moving on to a different bar, finding a different place to drink. And fortunately, thanks to higher wages and thanks to folks that I think are a little more willing to get back out there and work, there's somebody to keep the door open at that bar as well. So while, you know, I think the Fed may be one reason to be a little concerned about what's going on in the economy, the direction that the labor force is headed, the improvements we've seen in wages, I think can solve some of that problem. And that's the saving grace of a strong economy when the Fed is doing what they're doing. It's one thing if the Fed is being forced to respond when the economy is otherwise weak, but I think the strong economy helps make that less of a problem.
I have to file that analogy. I heard today that Southwest Airlines is going to start serving alcohol again. So they, that feeds into what you said about the more confidence in the economy going forward.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.